This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Today, news anchor Robert McNeil makes news. It's the final day that he's co-anchoring the McNeil-Lehrer News Hour, public television's award-winning evening news program. Today's broadcast also celebrates the 20th anniversary of the program. Robert McNeil and Jim Lehrer worked together longer than any other anchor team, edging out Huntley and Brinkley. In a couple of minutes, we'll talk with Robert McNeil about why he's leaving, and we'll ask him to look back on the past 20 years. First, from our archives, a short interview about his early years, recorded in 1989 after the publication of his memoir, Wordstruck, which was a reflection on his lifelong fascination with language. His previous memoir, Right Place at the Right Time, was a collection of career stories. He says that he purposely kept his distance when he was writing that first memoir. In 1989, I asked him if he was comfortable revealing more about his personal life.
A little. It comes out gradually. It's not given to my personality type to be very revealing, I think, about personal stuff, except with close friends. It's why I would have made a bad actor. A fact I was lucky enough to discover, as you probably noticed in the book, quite early in life.
Well, yeah, you talk about how you'd gone to New York just to try to be an actor.
Yeah, right.
And suddenly a voice in your head said, you want to say what that voice said?
Well, it said, you'd make a lousy actor. You know, you're too contained and you're not very demonstrative. I was lucky to have that voice speak to me so sharply, and I believed it. And it said, you know, you're meant to be the cool one behind the scenes, the writer or something, so...
And that's how you became a... You decided you were too stiff to act and that your calling was to write.
Yeah, yeah. Well, of course, a lot of people consider I'm... would probably consider that I'm too stiff to be a broadcaster, too, certainly.
Well, you know, as a journalist, you have to really care about accuracy. I think accuracy has a different meaning when you're talking about memory, which is part of what you're dealing in your book.
Yeah, it's a very interesting point, yeah. The memories in that book are as true as they can be. In other words, they are perfectly accurate emotionally, and I haven't doctored them at all, except to edit and leave some things out, but they are as my heart remembers them, you know, as well as my mind.
You have, as a journalist, worked in Canada, England, and the United States. Do you think you've picked up different pronunciations and expressions in each of the countries you've worked in?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Some of them have been conscious. When I find an expression I like, I love playing with it and using it. I lived and worked 16 years in Britain in two long batches, and I picked up a lot of British idiom. So I surprise and astonish some of my colleagues on the News Hour when I use an expression like, well, that'll put the cat among the pigeons, which I think is a wonderfully graphic expression for causing trouble, and a good deal nicer than whatever it is hits the fan in the current American idiom. But I do that all the time. And sometimes I lose my ear for it.
In your memoir, you write that your background and your interests put you well out of the stream of popular culture. You talked like a book.
Yeah. Well, I did. I was a snotty little kid, plummet with a plummy voice. You know, I had sung in a cathedral choir. I fancied myself as an actor doing a lot of Shakespeare when I was in my late teens and early 20s. And where it particularly became obvious to me was when I was hired as an all-night disc jockey in a small commercial radio station, which was, after having been an actor in the radio, my first sort of real job, certainly as an announcer. And I not only didn't know any of the patter and didn't know any of the music, because my interests were really in classical music, but I was very far away from easily using the vernacular that these disc jockeys used. So I don't know what to say, so I would steal some of their phrases, and I'd try and sound like them when they said, "And now, Les Brown and his band of renown." And it just all sounded kind of really phony coming out of my lips.
Well, on your first late night show, you used to read poetry in the middle of classical music records.
Yeah, because I didn't know anything about pop music, and around about 2 in the morning when I hoped everybody had gone to bed, I would, except for a few people, I'd do that, yeah.
In your memoir, you write that as a kid, you didn't listen to the news. You heard it in the background, like the Metropolitan Opera broadcast. Yeah. What brought news to the foreground?
I don't think it came into the foreground until I became a journalist. I really did not. I was so bound up in the theater and in writing that I paid only the most fleeting attention. No story ever really grabbed me very much. I'm very bound up in my own affairs. Until I became a journalist, really, I guess until I went to work on Reuters' desk in London in 1955, when I was in my middle 20s, it was only then I really became interested in news.
Did you ever have to cover up for the fact that early on you weren't a news hound?
Oh, yeah, yeah, I sure did. And I had none of the attributes. The attributes of a good news person came to me very gradually, and I acquired some of them very painfully. Like I was extremely reluctant and shy to accost somebody or knock on their door or to phone them up and bother them. And I still am to a degree, but it was just not part of my. I was not in that way aggressive.
Did you become aggressive, more aggressive?
Oh, sure.
Later
well,
on?
You learn professional aggression. I think you can't survive. I mean, I don't mean that I didn't have ambition, and you know, when you're in a certain kind of work, you do what's necessary to do that and do it well, or you get out and do something else. But I found I could become more aggressive.
Robert McNeil recorded in 1989 after the publication of his memoir, Wordstruck. McNeil has a new novel called The Voyage, and his desire to keep writing is just one of the reasons he's leaving the McNeil Era NewsHour. We couldn't let him go without wishing him luck and finding out more about his decision to go. I called him up and asked him how many times did he hear a little voice in his head saying, "I think I want to leave," before he took that voice seriously.
Oh, quite a lot. It occurred several times. Yeah, we had one moment back during the when the Gulf War was about to happen, and I was sitting in my office where I'm sitting now, and two of our executive producer and deputy executive producer, Les Crystal and Linda Winslow, were with me, and Jim was in Washington, hooked up with the associate executive producer, Dan Werner, and it was early January 1991. It looked as though Bush was about to go to war. And I was feverishly trying to finish my first novel. I was determined I was going to have a novel finished before I was 60 years old. And I was about to be 60 later that January. And my wife and I had arranged to go away to the Caribbean for 2 weeks where I could be 60 quietly and finish my novel. And so we had this meeting, and they started to say, "Well, you know, it looks like we're going to go to war. What are we going to do?" And I said, "Well, whatever you're going to do, just remember that I'm planning to be away." And they all jumped on me, starting with Jim. And said, "What kind of a goddamn journalist are you? You know, you're going to walk away during the biggest story of our time." Blah, 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 blah. And one after another, they all made the same point rather strongly. And I said, "Okay, yeah, all right." So we stayed. I stayed. I didn't have to be 60. we did the war, and it was obviously the right thing to do, and they were right. But clearly, a subversive little voice in me was saying, you know.
So at what point did you realize you were serious enough about this that you were actually going to tell Jim Lehrer?
In the spring last year, 94, Donna and I began talking about it and saying, "Well, I really think I want to do it." And so what we did was we made the decision ourselves around the beginning of June, just the two of us, and then said, "Well, let's live with it for a month and see if we change our minds at the end of a month."
Mm-hmm.
And then we didn't. And just over a year ago, Jim and Kate Lehrer came up to our place in Connecticut, and Donna and I had a four-person summit for a long weekend and talked it all around with the women as much part of it as the men. And decided that we wanted to make the split on the 20th anniversary of the program, and give everybody more than a year to get used to that idea and rearrange their lives.
Was Jim Lehrer shocked?
He expected it, but he was shocked. Yeah, he was, because the reality, although he was perfectly well prepared for it, And he was shocked. Yeah.
Try to talk you out of it?
No, he didn't. He just said, "Well, if that's it, then we go ahead with it." But we'd been telling each other. We have a very, very close friendship. We tell each other everything. And my feelings about all this were no secret to him. But the final decision was until, you know, that weekend. He'd prefer going on doing it with the two of us. But he'd also decided, and I knew this, that once I left, he did not want another co-anchor because it would just be too difficult to create another person as sort of involved as the two of us are. And that then led to a much bigger decision, which was to close down New York, and at the same time, which was very good in the current financial atmosphere of public television, to save the program some money by getting rid of the duplication of facilities and so on.
But
so
your decision wasn't about the budget, though.
No, it certainly wasn't. No, there was just a coincidence of factors.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So is it nice to have a symbolic day like the 20th anniversary?
Yeah, I think it's so easy to explain it. Why are you retiring today? Well, it's the 20th anniversary of the program. It seems like a good time to quit. It's my wedding anniversary. It is just a few months before I'm 65, and everybody understands people retiring when they're 65, so that's that.
My guest is Robert McNeil. Today he steps down as co-anchor of Public TV's McNeil-Lehrer NewsHour. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Robert McNeil. Your style on television as a journalist has always been based on fairness and straightforwardness. You know, no prosecutorial posturing, no show-off kind of stuff. Did you feel like your style has changed at all over the years?
Mine changed?
Yeah, or do you think that you found a style and found an approach and stuck with it?
Yeah, I think I found an approach and stuck with it. I said recently at a reception here that when I got back into broadcasting, having been 5 years at Reuters and never thought I'd be doing anything in broadcasting again, I had early in my career, as you know, done some radio acting and some announcing, but I had no idea I was going to go back into broadcasting when NBC hired me in London. And I was lucky enough to spend a couple of months with John Chancellor, who was the number two correspondent in London. And I was hired as an editorial assistant, but also to do some broadcasting. And I had to choose a style. And there were many styles to choose from at the time. There was the kind of declaiming style of the news, and then there was the sing-songy style of the news, you know, and then there was the sort of very clipped BBC style, and there was a CBC style that I knew, which was very self-important, this is the CBC, you know. And it was so refreshing to listen to Jack Chancellor, who instead of intoning or declaiming or proclaiming or announcing the news like some kind of electronic town crier, simply told it to you conversationally. He was also very funny in a lot of his stuff. And I thought, that is the way I'd like to be. And so I started doing that in my first radio stuff for NBC from London. And then Chancellor got transferred to Moscow, and I got his job as the number two correspondent, and that sort of cemented it. So I chose a style, at least in terms of delivery, deliberately, the most conversational way. And it's interesting that has now become pretty well the standard in American network television. There's very little bombastic style now. A few people still do it. But the old sing-songy, the declaiming, the movietone news styles, all those things, all the portentous styles have gone away largely.
You know, your interviewing style on camera has always been as fair and as dispassionate as possible, so that the story is about the views being expressed and not about your views.
I mean, you
don't try to bait people or anything.
Yeah, but there are two parts to that.
Yeah,
Terry. One is that if you're going to be on a program every night, mm-hmm. Jim and I, we discussed this way back at the very beginning. We don't have to make big demonstrations to make people aware of our presence. We're there night after night after night. And we are a medium through which viewers, gradually getting to know us better, judge the guests. The purpose of the program is to let people hear what the guests have to say, to help the guests have to say it, or help them say it, as well as challenging them so that they clarify and defend what they're saying. And we are criticized by some people as saying we're soft interviewers because we're so polite. And they will accuse us of, of deferring to important officials we have on. I don't think we do that at all. I think the pointed, informed question and a persistent attempt to get an answer for it, while couched in polite terms, is every bit as devastating to an individual as the so-called hard, interviewing somebody like Perry Mason with a witness in the dock, or F. Lee Bailey interviewing Mark Furman.
Have you ever done anything that you consider to be wildly out of character? Lose your cool, blow up, say something you regretted, become too emotionally involved?
I am not since we've done this program. I did in the past. Once when I was at NBC, it was election night, 1966. Covering the governors, I was referring to Spiro Agnew, who was running for governor of Maryland, and he, it's hard to remember that now, but he was the liberal candidate, the relatively more liberal candidate of two that year. The other guy was much more of a racist and so on. Anyway, I said that what it might come down to was the votes in Montgomery County, Maryland, adjacent to Washington, where a lot of people who worked in Washington lived and was rather more liberal in its views. I said, for instance, David Brinkley lives there. And Brinkley swung around in his chair and said, "How do you know how I voted?" And I said, "This is on the air." I said, "I didn't know how you voted, David. I just said that that's an area which has rather more liberal voters, and you live there." He said, "I thought the ballot in this country was meant to be secret, you know, and here you're." I said, "I didn't say that." Anyway, it went back and forth about, and he was partly kidding, but, and we had a laugh about it later, and he apologized very nicely to me afterwards for getting mad at me, but it was kind of dumb for me to have said it. I mean, you want to keep that sort of stuff out of. Where somebody lives is no business of the audience. But I was a bit cocksure, I think.
That's a funny story.
A bit overpleased with myself.
Robert McNeil, one of the reasons why you're leaving the McNeil Lehrer NewsHour is to write. And you've already written several books. You have a new book, actually, a new novel. It's your second novel. It's called The Voyage. It's interesting that you and Jim Lehrer are an anchor team where both of the anchors have written books.
Yeah, well, we both
fiction.
Had
I mean, fiction.
Strong,
yeah,
we both had a very strong sense of that vocation from when we first began,
mm-hmm.
and we both got into journalism, thinking that journalism was going to be a kind of antechamber to writing fiction. And his model was Hemingway and Robert Ruark. He wanted to be. He thought I wanted. Robert Ruark was a journalist and a fiction writer, and I wanted to be a fiction writer and became a journalist. Because I needed to earn a living. But I always thought, I better not stay here too long. It might ruin my prose style or something. As a matter of fact, it did nothing but good for it. But
do you worry at all that tomorrow morning, Saturday morning, the first day after you've left the McNeil Lehrer NewsHour, that you're going to wake up and say, "What have I done?"
Well, I don't think so. Because if I thought I was going to think that, Jim has told me, you can always change your mind. So, but I don't think I'm going to think that. For one thing, the occasion of this last program has brought to town, for the first time in a long time, all my three of my four children. One can't make it because she has an engagement in London. And my two brothers and their wives. And so it's going to be a wonderful family reunion. And then on Monday, I set off on a book tour of U.S. and Canada that's going to take me about 6 weeks, so it's going to have my head very much into that.
Right. Have you imagined yet what a day without adrenaline is going to be? Right. I mean, you're on deadline all the time,
yeah,
right? And adrenaline is like pumping away.
Yeah, I know, but you can divert that adrenaline flow into writing books. I certainly can.
Mm-hmm.
And I can get just as excited and driven writing a book as I can putting on a television program. And I'll tell you one neat thing about it.
Yeah.
You would appreciate this because the work you do is very much more yours than most of what we do in television. Television is necessarily a highly collaborative business. It takes many people and much negotiation and compromise with many people contributing ideas and then modifying those ideas to put on a television program like ours. So each day is a series of tiny little negotiations and compromises. And this is in the best of shops, like ours, where we all agree on the philosophy, where we all see eye to eye on the approach, and yet it just requires it. Well, do you think you can do this in 13 minutes? I don't know. I suppose so. Maybe if you could give me 12 and a half, I could do it. Let's see here. Well, I think we're going to have to... it's 100 of those every day. And it is a blessed luxury to be sitting down by yourself writing a book when it is just yours.
Well, let me say on behalf of many, many people, we will miss you. And I wish you very good luck. And thanks for all the years of broadcasts. And I look forward to more books by you.
Well, thank you. Now I can listen to you more.
Oh, I knew there was going to be a big advantage. Thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you, Terry.
Well, today is the last day to see Robert McNeil on the McNeil Era NewsHour, but you can read his work. Robert McNeil's new novel is called The Voyage. Monday, the NewsHour takes on a new identity as the NewsHour with Jim Lehrer. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.